welcome to the Christmas episode. I'm here today with my helper elves, Bill and Rom, wishing you a happy holidays.
Just joking, guys. We're here today with a special episode for you centered around Christmas and holidays. We're going to talk about a lot of interesting topics, and we have something kind of special to share with you guys. We have the original design docs for the Home Alone game from Sega. I acquired these a year or two ago from somebody that worked inside of Sega, so not many eyes have been set on this. It gives you a little bit different perspective of what goes into making a game, let alone a Christmas game, and how to make it interesting. So stay tuned with us through the end. We're also going to talk about some interesting games that have been turned from movies into games. I know there's always that stigma out there about games turned from movies into video games being terrible. And also, what games are good? What are some games that people don't talk about the holiday season? What should you check out? So we got a fun episode in store, and we're going to kind of kick it off with the general roundtable topic about Christmas morning. If you celebrate Christmas, or if you celebrate other holidays or other nominations, you're probably used to somebody or one of your friends having Christmas morning, or you yourself have memories of opening presents and gifts and all the things you got. So I'm going to start with Bill. Bill, you want to kind of chime in? Do you have any particular memories around Christmas morning? Any particular gifts you like really remember, or things that were special about Christmas to you? Whatever you want to talk about.
Absolutely. Yes. Thanks, Steve. So for me, I think I'm going to stick with a 90s theme. You know, that's kind of sticks out in my mind of lots of specific memories of Christmas morning. I remember I slept in front of the Christmas tree, like in a sleeping bag, on Christmas Eve. I don't know if any other kids did that, but that was something that was like a must. Had to do. The lights by the Christmas tree were just enough lights. You could just hang out there, just sleep on the ground right by the Christmas tree. And then Christmas morning comes and you're just, you know, just excited. You wake up everybody in the house. But for me, some things I remember from the 90s, including video games, were remote controlled cars, sports team memorabilia. I know the starter jackets kind of come to mind, different other things from the 90s that were popular back then. Everything was bright colors, even some like windbreakers, you know, when you obviously get some socks or some other clothing items. But, you know, every now and then you get something cool, like a cool hoodie for your favorite team or things like that. But I do have a couple Nintendo memories. I did not get like a console or anything like Epic, you know, like an entire Nintendo or anything, but there was some games that come to mind that I did get for Christmas. And those are Nintendo World Cup, which is a respectable game. It's a, you know, it's nothing that'll knock your socks off or anything, but it was a cool game. I remember getting that for a Christmas gift. And another big one that's a really good one is Mega Man 3 was a brand new in the box, shiny, rip open that package. And I don't think that game came out at Christmas time necessarily, but my parents bought it and it was a Christmas gift. I do remember that for sure. So those are just a couple specific memories for me.
Thanks, Bill. All right, Rom, you want to share some of your thoughts, some of your memories around Christmas morning?
Similar to Bill's, always like waking up super excited, waking up everybody in the house, being the youngest kid. I was the annoying little brother and making my older sister and brother really mad that I'm waking up at like 6 a.m. The biggest one, I'm going to take it to the 80s because I was a huge Transformers fan. I had all the Series 1 Transformers. And I remember in the same year getting the final two Constructicons for Devastator and getting Optimus Prime, like two Christmas gifts. Still to this day, I'm so mad that I guess I moved, and I, as you do, you just kind of sell them off or whatever. That was probably the coolest thing, because I was able to put this big Transformer together on Christmas Day. And then video game wise, it's kind of weird. It just reminds me of my grandmother. She didn't know much about video games, so she bought me a tennis game. It was like Chris Evert and Ivan Lendl. I remember those names. I had no clue who they were. But I'm like, oh, cool, I got a brand new game. And I'm like, but how do I even play? I never knew the rules of tennis or anything. But it just kind of one of those memories just reminds me of my grandmother. Those are probably the best, the two best memories that I can recall a little older, I got a Dreamcast, which was awesome too. But as a kid, those core memories kind of come back to you a little bit harder than when you're older and you're too cool for Christmas gifts. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I remember a lot of things when I was a kid. I had a grandmother who was super sneaky and would shake every present and want to see everything. And I remember coming down the stairs one year and the entire room was gift wrapped. You could not see into the room because the gift wrap was all the way across the hallway and everything. But then she figured out you could turn the light switch on and it let you see behind it. It kind of came translucent when the light turned on. So I guess Santa didn't think that went through. Man, I remember so many video games. Like, I didn't get a lot of video games as a kid. We didn't have a ton of money or any of that kind of stuff. So when you got a game, it was a big deal. And I remember getting some Game Gear games that really stood out to me. One of them being Sonic Triple Trouble. Absolutely love that game to death. It was one of my favorites. Played it to death. The other one is Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie for Game Gear. And to this day, I still love that game. I recommend it to people because it's a fantastic beat 'em up. And the cover on that thing is foil, and it looks so cool in person if you ever see the box. The whole box is shiny. As a kid, you get something shiny. You love shiny things. It's like, ooh, piece of candy, you know, the old Family Guy thing. But I'm going to share a picture with you guys on the screen here. Hopefully this works. I'll describe it for you, those of you listening. This is a picture I found sometime within the last year, and this is from one of my Christmases as a kid. Can you guys see the picture?
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
So this picture is a nostalgia bomb if you really start focusing in on it. There's a lot of interesting things in here.
There's some nightmare fuel.
So the gifts from Santa, you can tell, are in the front. So there was always a stack when we woke up that morning from Santa. You can see my original Sega Genesis there, which said it came with Sonic the Hedgehog. I know I mentioned this in our first intro episode, but I only ever owned Sonic 2, and I did not trade in the copy, so I have no idea how I ended up with Sonic 2. It should have been Sonic in there. It included the cartridge on the box, and that's actually a rare box variant. I found one on eBay and bought it because I have my original unit, so now I can stick it all back in the original box. But Creepy Crawlers, anybody remember Creepy Crawlers?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I never got one.
Those things were fun. Mighty Max, that was the answer to Polly Pocket. And actually, it's ironic because in my pocket right now is Mighty Max. I found it and put it in my small pocket of my pants because my mom had some stuff. You know, the jeans have those little quarter pockets or whatever. So I was amazed that I found that, but I do not have that still. It says the Skull Dungeon on it. Sneaking in here right behind this piece of paper is, you could tell, Emilio Estevez, Mighty Ducks VHS tape. Classic movie right there.
100%. Oh, man.
That's great.
Barney. If you had any younger siblings or depending on when you were born, you know, that was a huge thing back then in the 90s. I remember getting annoyed that I just missed that generation and having to listen to that all the time with the I love you, you love me. And I would make all these funny jingles of my own to make fun of it. But one of my brothers loved it. This I do not remember at all. Micro Machines Z-Bots. Anybody ever remember that?
Not Z-Bots specifically, but I had a lot of Micro Machines for sure.
Yep, they hurt when you step on them, that's for sure.
And you can tell that, like, this was the younger child at the time. Like, there's a piece of paper in front of every child's stuff. I have no idea what my other things are to the side here. But if you look at my youngest brother, he had all, like, the younger kid toys here. There's a particular highlight to me, this Gymboree VHS tape. Look at that kid on that cover. He's like, there's this kid leaning back with like this cringe look on his face. And only in the VHS in the 80s and 90s would you get away with a cover like that and sell it. So I can only imagine the content on that VHS is as good as that cover.
That is a gem.
Yeah, they actually had equivalent for Creepy Crawlers. They had one where you could make in a metal mold factory. And you can make cool little wizards and put gems in it. I got that for Christmas one year, too. So moving on to the next topic, we want to talk a little bit about Christmas movies turned video games. There's always a stigma out there. If you got a movie, you're going to make a video game back then. Oftentimes, those video games are not very good. You know, LJN got a hold of it. But there's been a number of them. And, you know, especially holidays, everybody's trying to cash in on the holidays. So why not start with one of the most classic Christmas movies out there, Home Alone? Home Alone got a lot of video game titles over the years. You can look at just about every platform. If you start at the NES, the Game Boy, even I think Game Boy Color era may have gotten a Home Alone. There was multiple movies, Home Alone, Home Alone 2, Home Alone 3. AVGN, Angry Video Game Nerd, he did a whole episode highlighting them. I mean, that's how bad most of these Home Alone video games are. But there was one out of the entire collection that I personally think is the best of the lot, and that is the Sega Genesis version. And that's the only one that I would personally recommend playing outside of a novelty of it being Home Alone. A lot of them veered away from the movie. You kind of like, well, what are we doing? You're in a house, but it's not really like Home Alone. You guys have any memories about playing any of the Home Alone games? Did you get a chance to play any of those turds?
I do. I remember specifically renting, I believe it was the Super Nintendo version. And I think going back to it, you know, it's not good. But my memories were good. I should have not played it now because I specifically remember it being chaotic and running away from the robbers. And I remember it being a good time. I don't know if I rented it more than once. So maybe it was okay, but it was fun when I was a kid, at least. But yeah, going back to it, not so much.
Yeah, a lot of them were interesting, like the gameplay wasn't very good, or they had weird enemies and you were getting chased, or it was very over-the-top difficult. That's what I remember as a kid playing Home Alone. I didn't play every single one. I think I had one of the Game Boy titles as well. But they were really cash grabs more than anything. But the Sega Genesis is a decent game. And like I mentioned before, I got the design document here. It's for Sega Genesis and Game Gear Edition. Give you a little insight behind the scenes there. So the next one I wanted to talk about, and this actually surprises me a lot, Santa Claus 3 Escape Clause. That came out on Game Boy Advance. I gave a copy away with a GBA on a Discord server a couple years ago. I actually don't hate this game. It amazes me, as big a series as the Santa Claus is, that the first game they ever got was Santa Claus 3. I mean, the other two were big hits. Where was Santa Claus? Santa Claus 2. We got Home Improvement with Tim Allen on Super Nintendo, but they missed the first two titles. This game, if you look at like the old reviews, IGN rated this game terribly. For me, it's a decent platformer. I think it got bashed because there was a lot of platformers. It was in that era where people were getting kind of burnt out on the 2D platformer. They've done everything with them going into GBA era. And, you know, the genericness of being a platformer was kind of weighed against it. But to me, it fits the theme. It's not going to wow anybody. But if you like Santa Claus, you like platformers, it's a decent time. You probably won't go back to it, but you'll have fun.
I think that's a little bit beyond past my time.
Some of these titles, you'll find that none of us have probably tried. But I'm trying to pull in a little bit of information here for each of you, so you get an idea of what the games are like, whether they were well regarded or not. A lot of these we played. If we have insights, we'll certainly share with you. The next one is a very controversial topic. So controversial that should it be on this list? You can think about that yourself. Die Hard. All right. That was probably a clue. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? In my book, it's a Christmas movie. Anytime you film a movie at Christmas time, it fits in with the theme. So Die Hard. Die Hard have had a number of different games. And the main games, you got NES, Die Hard. That's a kind of like a top-down view action game. To me, it was decent, but the manual actually has some insightful advice in there. So if you don't own the manual or you want to play that game, it's worth taking a peek through there so you can understand all the things you can do. You'll be a little lost or you won't pick up on everything automatically. And that's part of old games. That's why they put the manual in there sometimes. It had that additional information. I don't mind the game. I'm sure that the two of you guys, one of you has probably tried it. Have either of you played it? The NES version?
Yeah, and I had no clue what I was doing. And I think I rented it, maybe, and I didn't have the manual with it. It makes sense now. Just not having the manual, you're not... After about 45 minutes to an hour, I'm like, all right, I'll chalk it up to another wasted weekend of a rental.
Yeah, there's a lot of games back then. You didn't have the internet, so you kind of struggled through. You had to learn them. Game like Die Hard, if you don't have the manual, it's a lot more challenging and you get lost. There's a lot of games like that in that era where the manual was almost essential and you didn't know. You didn't have it. That's one to me that definitely was. And then the next one that kind of came out, you know, I'm not sure exactly which one came out first, but Die Hard Arcade. Die Hard Arcade was an absolute blast of a time. That came out on Sega Saturn. There was also the arcade game. very similar. It was a beat 'em up shooter. I mean, I remember taking the guns, like beating people with whatever poles or whatever the heck they gave you in a game. And then, you know, you got the gun shooting. It was nonstop action, the action scenes with the countdowns and all that. I mean, it was just a classic game. I have not heard anybody that's played that game and not loved it.
Yeah, it is cheesy greatness. It's fantastic. I love those types of games, over the top action. You know, everything's a weapon. You're throwing pipes, you're throwing chairs, you're just, the sound design alone, I think, makes it fun, because it's just that the hits, the noises when you hit guys, it's just great. And I'll add one more little thing. I played Die Hard Arcade in an arcade, have not played the Saturn version. However, Dynamite Cop, has anyone played that? So that's kind of like a spiritual successor, if you will, or whatever, in that series, is for the Dreamcast.
Same developer, right? Like AM2, I believe they did like Virtua Fighter and all that, right?
Yeah.
I think it's the same people.
And so I currently have that in my collection on Dreamcast, and it's almost, I mean, it's a very similar game, but what a blast. Those quick time events, Steve, is what you're talking about. Some people love or hate those. I know they're a little, some people just don't care for them, but I always thought they're cheesy and kind of fun. Like, you got to quick time your button presses at the right time, or you know, the action sequence that they show on screen might be a little different if you mess up or don't have your timing down. It's kind of fun.
Well, that's when it was kind of new. It was new back then, right? Like, and yeah, I just remember the, you know what they did in arcades, you'd walk in and like they'd up the volume 20-30% higher, and I gravitated toward the Die Hard arcade because I was like, oh, you know, this thing's louder, so that's automatically amazing. And it was freaking great. I loved it.
You're completely right. I remember that arcade cabinet being exceptionally loud.
Yeah, you talked about the cheesiness of the QuickTime events. I equate that to like Miami Vice back then and some of those. It was like that kind of cop, good cop, bad cop, cheesy, like action, like pausing, you know, everything's breaking. You know, it was a little bit of everything. You had to live in the 90s to really understand that. If you lived in the 90s, you're like, I know exactly what you're talking about. It was a classic. And Die Hard, the last one for the system, or not for Saturn, but Die Hard Trilogy for PS1. That was kind of the round out of Die Hard games. I can't recall any other off the top of my head, but that one was more of like a, kind of like back to the third person, almost top down shooter. It covered the first three movies. I remember it being decent, but after playing Die Hard Arcade, nothing could be better than Die Hard Arcade in my book.
I've never played that one.
I'm actually looking at picking that up for Saturn, but after hearing people talk about it, I'm like, maybe I should just save up and get Arcade again to save some disappointment.
Yeah, I remember the game. I don't remember it like, wow, that was like really a standout game to me, but I don't remember hating it either. It was kind of one of those, you play it and you move on kind of things. There's a lot of games out there like that. The next one I have on the list is interesting. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And it is based on the old movie. Was that the 50s that came out with the claymation? That is a classic. I mean, I remember watching it every year since I was a kid, that movie, and loving it. All the great songs in there. You know, great property to work with. Well, it was on the Nintendo Wii, so if that tells you anything, the Wii was full of shovelware. This was made by a budget company, and this was rated by IGN, I wrote this down, 15 out of 100. And if you look at the user reviews, it's like a 1 out of 10 or somewhere around there. Not much better. This comment I wrote down specifically because I thought this summed up pretty well everybody's thoughts on this. The best thing about the game is the loading screen.
Ouch.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
That's a pretty sick burn right there. It's basically a bunch of very generic mini games, and apparently it's not worth playing. I've never touched it. I doubt either of you have. I've seen it in a pile of shovelware in somebody's garage sale, but that's about it.
I did not know it existed or have even seen the cover art or anything.
The cover art is right from the movie. So like, it makes you think like, oh yeah, cool. I love that movie. Let's check it out. Don't do it.
Got that false sense of hope. We've been there.
So the next one also ties in. I put this kind of in order because of that. Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Another one of those same claymation movies, really old property, a lot of great material. And this one actually is pretty good. Same studio too. They messed up the first one. They went in a completely different direction with the second one, and they stepped their game up. And it came out on the Wii as well. Now it's a platformer, so you got 25 stages of platforming. It's based on the movie. It's decent. It's not, you know, it's no Breath of the Wild or 10 out of 10 game at all, but you'll find a lot of the familiar music. So there's a little bit of nostalgia in this game. You actually added in cutscenes that are more interesting. Not a super great playthrough, but if you love that movie, you may actually enjoy that game. So that's one worth potentially checking out. The next one, Christmas Carol. Everybody remembers Christmas Carol. It's been done so many different times by so many different people. This is based on Disney's A Christmas Carol, that exact title. Not Muppet's Christmas Carol. I love that movie. It's sitting at on Metacritic. I've never actually played this one myself, but sitting at a 66 on Metacritic. I know a lot of people don't like Metacritic, but it's one of the only places that pulls in these old reviews from back then from different places. It's an interesting premise. I would not have guessed this whatsoever when I was researching for this episode, but it's like an old PC adventure game like Monkey Island. It's a point-and-click interact game, and apparently it's pretty faithful to the genre, and people that like that genre really gave it excellent reviews from users and everything. So that actually sounds like one I would be interested in checking out. I like all those old point-and-click games. I remember playing Myst. I get confused and lost on that one, but Monkey Island was great.
Yeah, this is from the Jim Carrey one. I knew they released it, but I didn't realize, like, because they've released a couple of them. That's interesting. It doesn't look like Jim Carrey in the actual screenshots, but...
No, it doesn't.
It is the DS, so... But yeah, it looks fun.
Yeah, point-and-click interaction game. I mean, do you ever like those, Bill?
I have not played a lot of them. It's a genre I'm interested in and need to try some, and haven't tried very many at all.
I would have never guessed that.
Yeah, for me, my attention span isn't great when it comes to stuff like that. Myst, like the first three or four screens, I'm like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm done. And I'm not ashamed.
Oh, yeah, Myst. I got lost in that game like 800 times. Somebody still needs to go find my childhood self in Myst. I don't know where I was lost. I found I actually kind of – I liked some of that back in the day. There was a lot of really good ones from Lucasfilms did a lot of those. Point and click.
Sam and Max, Grim Fandango. I love the art of Grim Fandango. It was so cool. I watched someone, I think I just watched, I don't watch playthroughs a lot, but I did on that one just because it gave me that Tim Burton vibe, like watching, almost like watching Beetlejuice.
You know, it's one of my favorite of all time, and the animation still holds up to this day. And if you have never played this game, I encourage you to go look at it. It's not a Christmas game, but you guys just made me think of it. And that's Neverhood.
I remember I've seen it on PC. I think I owned it, but it's one of those. I didn't know what the heck I was doing, but the animation was amazing. It was like you were playing a claymation game or stop motion.
It looked like a movie. I mean, everything was animated and it was claymation. It was done by DreamWorks, like the movie studio. And it was an adventure game that was this whole world built out of clay. And it was super interesting. The animation was amazing for the time. It was basically stop motion video. When you did it, it would, you know, segment to the next one. And then you would slowly figure it out. And every now and again, you run into a puzzle and have to interact with stuff. That game was super weird, super cool. And I definitely recommend it. You never, if you want to go in that genre and play something interesting, or even if you're a veteran and you never heard of Neverhood, it's not cheap. Check it out.
Oh, man, I'm looking at the screenshots now. That brings me back. I wish that I had a better attention span when I was a kid, but with games like this.
They had a PS1 game that was a platformer. I own it. I'm trying to think of the name of it off the top of my head. It had a lenticular cover on it, too. It was okay. They tried to recapture the magic, but turn it into a platformer. And it had the cool graphics and all that, but it was kind of missing on the platforming side. So it was a so-so game. Because I love the original game, I've added that one to my collection. But otherwise, I probably wouldn't own that game. So moving on to the next one. This is a movie that is beloved by many. Gremlins. Don't get them wet and don't feed them after midnight. That was definitely a movie. It was at Christmas time. A number of the video games have references to it. And it was on so many platforms. And Gremlins goes way back to the 80s. I mean, it has an Atari 2600 game. It has other Atari systems, the 5200. It was on Amiga, a number of those early ones of the early titles were very similar, pretty much same game, just different platforms. And then they moved on to the NES, and the NES got Gremlins 2, which, in my opinion, is the best one. I own that game. I enjoy that game. It's a top-down action platformer with upgradable weapons, stays faithful to the game. If you love that movie, it's a total must-play to me on the NES if you're an NES guy.
Bill, you're still looking for Gremlins 2, aren't you?
I am. And I, of course, being the soundtrack guy, have to mention it's developed by Sunsoft. And it's got that distinct Sunsoft sound to the soundtrack. You know, think Batman.
Blaster Master. Master's Quest.
Yeah, see, he knows. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So I'll buy games based on soundtrack alone, but it's bonus. It's a good game also.
Dude, the monster designs were so good. The spider gremlin, that fight was awesome. But then I'm like, and I did this recently. I was like, oh, cool. I want to get it on Game Boy. Because for a while, I was like, just Game Boy, Game Boy, Game Boy. And then I played, I'm like, wait a minute. It's like playing Batman, the movie, the video game on NES or Game Boy, but with Gremlins. And I was a little bummed because I was hoping you'd get that top-down perspective. So definitely the NES is still the best version of the game.
Yeah, and I think that Gremlins 2 on NES is the best of all the Gremlins games, even if you look towards the newer ones. I'll talk about the other ones in a minute. It's an excellent game. Gremlins 2 on Game Boy is not bad, but it's not as good as NES. And Bill, now that I know you don't have it, I'm going to remind you frequently that you need to buy that game. If you ask the average person, they'd probably give it like, you know, if you're rating out of 5 stars, I'd probably get like a 3, 3.5 stars. If you really like the franchise, for me, it's a 4. I would probably give it a 4. I think very highly of that game. It's not a 5, though.
Definitely one of the better movie to video game, that was, especially during that time.
That time frame, a lot of them were not good, and that was, you know, for me, a gem out of the pile, and I love that movie, too, so that's just bonus. And if you move forward, they kept making Gremlins, although the sales, I think, really went down on the Gremlins games. You had Gremlins Gizmo on DS and Wii. That one is, like, got a cute picture of Gizmo on the cover, and it's really geared towards kids. It's kind of like a mini game compilation. I own the DS version of that. It's so-so. I mean, it's mini games, but it's pretty generic. It's more cashing in on the Gremlins than it is being a Gremlins game. It's a mini game first. And then they also made the cover art's pretty cool on it. The Gremlins Stripe vs. Gizmo on Game Boy Advance. It's kind of an interesting one. I personally like the game. Some people don't like the game. I don't think it's a bad game whatsoever. I think it's interesting, and they tried a different take. So you can choose who you get to be. You can either be Gizmo or Stripe. And then that influences your goal in the level, and it's a platformer. There's some stuff that you have to collect, like presents. I mean, it tried something different to me. The fact that you can choose a character and it changes the style of the game. I mean, that's interesting. That was inventive.
Yeah, I didn't even know that was out there. That's pretty cool. Before we go off Gremlins, and I'm going to segue, like, for Christmas-wise, is there a song that you correlate with a movie? Or again, like, to me, hearing Do You Hear What I Hear? That song, I can't think of anything except for the gremlin and the Christmas tree attacking the mom. Like, I can't every holiday season, I'm like, such a beautiful song, but all I can think of is a gremlin attacking an old lady. And I don't know if any of you guys have any correlations. I've got one more. It's not video game related, so maybe I'll skip it.
I don't know if I have any particular songs that, like, I tie specifically to a movie. How about you, Bill?
Not that I can think of, I guess. Home Alone type stuff, going back to that. That's instantly recognizable. All the, even the you know, licensed music that was in that. That doesn't really necessarily tie back to video games. If I hear any seconds of anything out of that movie, instant Christmas memories right there. But no, that's a great subject, Rom, and I totally get it with the Gremlins thing. That's great.
Man, there's one more. It's Jaws, too. I forgot what song it is, but just you hear it, and you're just like, oh, that's when Jaws bites that dude's arm off and then kills him. And my wife's like, she kind of questions my sanity, but I'm like, that's just what I remember. It's weird what their mind does sometimes.
So the next one on my list is Polar Express, right? Everybody remembers that story. I remember going to library as a kid in middle school and the librarian reading the Polar Express. And then all of a sudden there was this movie came out as I got a little bit older. The whole animated movie with Tom Hanks had a lot of promise to it. The movie was decent. It was very faithful to the story. It was well animated. The graphics are good. So it's a good property, I guess, for a video game. Although there's, how do you turn that, you know, riding in a train into a video game? Well, that's a struggle, I think, from the standpoint of designing, because we got three games for Polar Express. We got Game Boy Advance. We got GameCube. We got PS2. And it was universally bashed on all platforms. All the games were geared towards kids. They were all bad. And if you're going to play any of them, the only one that has any redeeming qualities is the Game Boy Advance version. I personally would steer clear of all of them. None of them are good.
Yikes.
There's very few games where it's like, it's that bad. This is one of those. So the next one on the list, this is actually one of a personal favorites of mine, and it's kind of borderline Christmas, borderline not. I mean, Christmas is in the title, so it counts. Nightmare Before Christmas. You got two games, Oogie's Revenge and The Pumpkin King. Oogie's Revenge, PS2, Xbox, and Pumpkin King on Game Boy Advance. I own both of those games. They are personal favorites of mine. The PS2 Xbox version, I personally like the Xbox version. I think Xbox gets a little more power there in that era, even though PlayStation 2 was the bigger successor. If you're a fan of the series, you will enjoy the game. It's an action-adventure title. It's got fun boss fights in it. The voiceover work is excellent. The music is good. It's catchy. It'll remind you of the movie. And the gameplay, well, not perfect, it's decent. And that makes it a fun game. And some of the boss fights are pretty interesting. I mean, the boss fights, you're like, wow, that was really cool and fun. I would definitely recommend that if you're a fan of the series. It's not going to win any awards either, but it's definitely above average game. Now, when we talk about the Pumpkin King for GBA is a completely different style of game. It's more of a platformer. And as soon as I say what I'm going to describe it as, Bill's going to perk his ears up. It's kind of Jack Skellington turned Castlevania. So it's got a little bit of that Metroidvania feel to it. The problem that it has is it's fairly generic, right? You're going through these levels and it feels like you're going through the same places over and over again. You see a lot of cool stuff. You see stuff from the property, but you see a lot of the same thing. And that could be probably the biggest knock, I would say, on it. But it's not a bad game. I mean, if you like that style of game, you'll enjoy it. If you like the property, yeah. I will say that if you're looking for true Christmas, the Pumpkin King really doesn't focus too much on the Christmas side of it. It's mostly the Halloween side. That is a property that is Christmas and Halloween all in one bundle.
Yeah, I feel like it's an easy assumption that they would make those. I guess I didn't realize they existed. And you were correct, Steve. As soon as I saw in the notes there that it's a platformer inspired by Castlevania, you got my attention. If it's on the GBA, I would probably want to try it. I mean, unless the only thing that would hold me back from trying this title would be price charting of $100 for a loose cart or something. I assume since it's a game based on a movie, it's less than $30. I don't know. Yeah, I'd be willing to try it.
Yeah, it's not a super expensive game. I haven't checked it any time recently, so it could be way off base, but I want to say it used to be like $15-$20, something like that. There are a lot of fans of that movie series. It ties into the whole spooky Halloween, which tends to be popular with collectors on video games. So you get a little crossover collecting. And the PS2 Xbox game is just fun. I really enjoy that game. I definitely recommend that if you've never tried it. Action adventure, boss fights. You got Oogie Boogie, all the cool characters. I mean, it's a great property to play with, and I'm glad that they did some justice to it. The next one on the list, this is one that's had a few different games, The Grinch. And I'm not going to talk about the new Switch release because I don't know enough about that, although it has gotten very good reviews. We're more going to focus in on the retro side of this. This is Retro Recall. First off, there was one called The Grinch. It was a PS1 and Dreamcast release. It was kind of like an adventure 3D platformer. It was in that era when 3D platformers were really starting to struggle a little bit. It was pretty bland. It was kind of guilty of those tedious missions and collectibles. You had to collect gifts. Getting them all was just a pain, and you didn't have fun, and the platforming quality wasn't good. The jumping was terrible. You got tired of the game pretty quickly. Personally, would not recommend that game. it's not that it's horrendous. If you're going to do one of the two, your Dreamcast is a little better than the PS1 version, but they really didn't do the property justice as classic as the Grinch is. They had a Game Boy Color game, and that was surprisingly good. It's interesting because it's kind of like a hybrid video game. It's a lot like Pac-Man. You run around the town, so they have it, you know, kind of set up on a screen where you see the whole map, and you run around the town trying to collect all the presents. So think of Pac-Man with the little dots. And then the Whoville residents run around and they're trying to stop you, right? But they don't chase you unless they see you. So it's kind of like a little bit of a stealth mission game. So you, instead of Pac-Man where they just run around all the time, if they catch you, then they come after you and you got to try to collect all the presents without getting caught. So you can ruin everybody's Christmas fun. And they're there to try to spread Christmas cheer to you. And you're the Grinch, so you don't want that. It's an interesting design. It's a decent game, surprisingly. Every now and again, you get surprised. You know, they had some interesting ideas with it. You know, I would definitely recommend playing that one. And then there was one more, what I would call more on the retro side, is the DS game. I would say don't bother with that. It's a very short and repetitive game. They basically skinned a terrible game that looks exactly the same the entire game. And maybe take a half hour to beat it, and you'll be bored the whole time.
Makes sense that they would make games based off the Grinch, but all news to me. And once again, I think the Game Boy wins out, and that kind of sounds interesting. I mean, if I'm listening to your description right, Pac-Man, Metal Gear, some stealth stuff, and the Grinch, that's kind of sounds interesting and unique, and I'd be willing to try that as well.
Yeah, it was actually reviewed very well back in the day. I want to say it even got like a 9 out of 10.
Wow.
And it was that, I think Metal Gear was one of the names they used for when I was going back reading some of the reviews on it. It was Pac-Man meets Metal Gear.
I mean, that's the thing that comes to my mind when I hear stealth, you know?
For that era, yeah. Metal Gear was one of the ones that was doing that at the time before we got into a lot more games in the PS1 era onwards. The next one is a beloved movie. I watch this every year. It's one that always gets brought up, Elf the movie. Well, it got one game, and it was on Game Boy Advance.
Let me guess. I have no clue about it. Is it like a platformer?
It is exactly that. A lot of the generic movies were platformers, and it had some mini games in it as well. And the game was just poorly made. The animations were terrible. It's really not worth your time. It's one of those things that it was so low budget and bland that it didn't even have sound effects. So you would be just doing things and nothing would make noise.
Oh.
It was not a good game. I've owned a copy of that. It's not a good one. Every now and again, I peek in like a little game that's like, hey, is this going to be any good? And you know, you pop it in, you're like, this is terrible. I get rid of it. I wouldn't be surprised if that game's under $5. It probably is. And then the last one I'll talk about when we talk about movies turn Christmas video games, this one may get some debate as well, like Die Hard, but Batman Returns. What do you think? Is it a Christmas movie to you guys? It's set during Christmas time.
Yep.
Absolutely.
I'd say that checks off the box.
To me, if it's during Christmas time, it's a Christmas movie. And Batman Returns had a number of different games. They had Sega Genesis. They had the Super Nintendo game. They also had a Sega CD game, which was an interesting spin off of the other games. In my opinion, the Sega Genesis version, and I may be a little biased, I'm a Sega guy, it was a solid Batman experience. It was an action platformer. It was fun. Was it great? Nah, it was okay. But I remember it. I remember playing it. I remember having a good time. If you like Batman, you like action platformers, it had a lot going for it. The SNES game was different. It was more of a beat 'em up. And that too was actually not too bad. Some people hate on that game a little bit, but I didn't mind it. It was fun. The graphics are cool. Going through the game and playing through it, beating them up. I mean, beat them ups were huge at that time. They'd gotten the rhythm down of how to do them pretty well. I like it. And then the last one is the Sega CD version. And the Sega CD was interesting because it combines kind of the Genesis version with some driving stages. Have any of you played that game?
No, but I would like to try it because I've seen lots of gameplay of it or footage of it, and it looks really fun. Looks really cool.
Yeah, you got great music. You got these really fast driving stages. You're driving a Batmobile. I mean, that sounds cool. You get through that, and after a few driving stages, then you end up in action platforming, almost very similar to the Genesis version. You also have cinematics in there. You got some good music. And to me, it's really a decent game. I mean, maybe even the Sega CD may be the best version of them all. It's just different. So if you don't like the driving stages, you may not like that one as much. But to me, you know, I think they did a pretty good job with the game overall.
Yeah, I played it on SNES and Genesis, but not Sega CD. And now I've started to look more into Sega CD and Saturn stuff. So this might be on my, I think this might be on my list. But yeah, it definitely looks pretty fun.
I try to look at what kind of Christmas video game movies are out there. And there's only really two that I could come up with. And the first one I'm going to start with is 8-Bit Christmas. This is a recent movie.
It's great.
I've never seen it.
Bill, go watch it.
Dude, it's 100% nostalgia. It's done really well.
It's with Neil Patrick Harris. It's set in 1980s Chicago. A 10-year-old sets out on a quest to get his Christmas gift. And it's the gift that he's always wanted, his Nintendo, which considered the greatest video game system of all time in that movie. But just watching back to those days, it reminds you of your childhood and going to the malls and the search. And remember going over to your friend's house or somebody that had the video game system and you didn't have it. And then everybody's watching, but not everybody gets to play. And there's so many different great moments in that movie. Anybody that has not seen that movie, and if you love retro video games, go watch it. It's great. I will easily watch that one every year. I could see that being a classic. The other one, I'm going to call this loosely, quote unquote, loosely, Adventures in Game Chasing from the Game Chasers. And the reason why I say that is because the movie starts off with Billy and Jay, and they've been friends since kids, and now life's kind of like tough on them, and they go on an adventure to track down Billy's original NES gaming system. And in the beginning, he got it. I believe that was like Christmas morning, so I'm throwing it in the list, but it was a decent video game. They did a great job acting. They did a great job with all the animation and all that. So if you like retro video games, you like the Game Chasers, you know, there's one to go check out. Most of the movies not Christmas themed, though. Spoiler alert.
Steve, do you mind if I circle back to Batman Returns on the previous list?
Yeah. Yeah. Go right back.
On that game, I think it's a tale of two developers. Game Gear and Genesis were developed by Malibu Interactive, and Konami did the SNES version. To me, I guess I own Batman Returns on Genesis, but I've actually never played it. It's been on the shelf ever since I picked it up. The Konami beat 'em up, you know, is a formula that's usually going to hit. That game is super fun. The sound effects are great. The first level, you know, just discussing if it's Christmas or not. It's snowing. There's Christmas trees in the background. I mean, it's definitely Christmas time. The one fatal flaw that it has, though, is it's one player only. I just wanted to point that out for any big fans of those and the debate of which system has the better Batman Returns game. I do need to play my Genesis copy, though.
Anytime you can play a Genesis game is a good day. All right, let's move on down to the last topic before we get to a little bit of review of the Home Alone design docs. And this is overlooked or favorite Christmas video games. Stuff that we haven't mentioned yet that didn't tie in with the movies. There's a couple interesting ones on this list. These are some of my favorites. And if you guys have played them, feel free to chime in as well. The first one is Elf Bowling. You may have seen a copy of that, but not everybody remembers the whole mystique around this game. It was really interesting. Before getting viral was a thing, there was Elf Bowling. And it started off as an EXE file, which if anybody knows an EXE file, that's your program file that you start up to run a program. You were allowed to email those to people back in the late 90s. Nowadays, you can't because of computer viruses and risks with doing so. They don't let you do that. You can't attach it to your email anymore. It's not a thing. But people would send it to each other, and people thought it was a virus. People would panic, and then they found out it was a game, so then they tried it. So there's this whole hysteria over Elf Bowling, and it was really a joke gimmick advertising campaign. Tons of people played it because of all the hoopla over it. I remember playing it back on the PC in those days. I mean, it was nothing crazy. It was elves were the pins. You knocked them over with your bowling ball. You know, it was pretty fun for 10, 15 minutes. It's kind of like that little skiing game you'd play on your computer that was always loaded on Windows. But it was a great time. And just to show you how popular it was, I found a statistic online. In 2000, December, there were 54 million people playing PC games. Out of that, 7.6 million played Elf Bowling. That's a pretty substantial number for a game that was free, that was shipped around by email. And that's interesting. I enjoy it. They ported it to the DS. They ported it to GBA. It's still a fun time. It's not something you're going to play for an hour. It gives me a good chuckle. And it's cool to know a little bit of the history behind there.
I remember in high school, like, everybody had it on their computer. And teachers were like, if I see you playing Elf Bowling, you're in trouble. And I was just like, I was more interested in playing Quake and stuff like that. So like, I was like, what is this dumb little cartoon game? But now that we've talked about it, I remember a lot of hype around it.
Same with me. I completely forgot this existed, and I'm so glad that you brought it up. And I completely forgot it was an EXE file. Like, that's really funny. And I definitely remember that. It was on a lot of computers. I do remember that.
Yeah, and who knows how they came up with that statistic. It may have been more than 7 million. I don't know anybody that didn't play it. The next one on the list, this is a game that pops up quite often, James Pond. It was James Pond 2, codenamed RoboCod, on Sega Genesis. It also saw some releases on other platforms, Amiga, Atari ST. It got ported to SNES, Game Boy, Game Gear, Commodore 64. There were even more than that. It was also called Super James Pond on some of those platforms like SNES and Game Boy. It doesn't look like a Christmas game whatsoever, but as soon as I read this to you, the description I kind of jotted down in my notes, you'd be like, yeah, that's a Christmas game. It even got redeveloped and released on later consoles too. So it has some staying power, at least out of games. It starts off at Santa's Toy Factory right outside, where there's kind of doors to different levels. And there's 50 total levels in the game, so all of them have kind of a different theme. The story is kind of James Pond's archenemy, Dr. Maybe. He survived, and he's retreated to the North Pole, where he's taken over Santa's workshop. He's taken the workers hostage and turned them into the Twisted Dangerous Assistants. So you've been recruited to infiltrate Santa's workshop and retrieve the stolen presents and liberate Santa's helpers to defeat Dr. Maybe. I mean, it's kind of an interesting choice of scenarios here, but it was colorful. It was a decent platformer. I don't have anything negative to say about it. I really enjoyed the Genesis copy. I played the Game Gear. I liked the Game Gear, but Genesis version is definitely the best out of the bunch. And I played it on some of the other platforms too. It's worth a play.
I have it in box. Like, I don't have a lot of Genesis games, but I remember seeing the first one, but I had no clue that it was a Christmas thing. I wonder if my kids might want to play that. Like, hey, you got to play it. Here's a Christmas game. And see, it'd probably be too hard.
Being a Genesis collector, I definitely know of the James Pond franchise, but I've actually never played any of them.
It's a good one to do. I mean, it was stayed around enough that they made ports to other stuff later on, and they re-released it. Definitely worth a play. And you would never know. I mean, you look at the box.
Had no clue. Yeah. Even looking at some of the back gameplay, I didn't get any Christmas vibes at all.
That's because every door and every level has a different theme, even though you're in Santa's workshop.
Oh, okay.
But I think that's part of the thing. Like, you're in Santa's workshop, you open the door, you get taken somewhere else, right? Santa goes all over the world. The next one on the list here is a series that has a cult following, Christmas Nights into Dreams. A lot of people get confused about this game too, because they know about Nights into Dreams. Sega released it. Oh, I need to get the sequel, Christmas Nights into Dreams. Well, it was not a sequel. It was a special release for Sega Saturn. It came out on a promotional sampler disc, and they have released it in other manners over the years, but it's really just a short Christmas-themed version of Nights into Dreams. And if you have never played Nights into Dreams, it's a pretty fun game. It's in that era with Sega Saturn, and they had kind of the 2.5D platformers where it made you feel a little more 3D, but it was still kind of a 2D set screen, and you'd fly around and collect different stuff, and there were these rings in the sky, and you loop around. The controls took a little getting used to, but once you did, it was a pretty fun game. I enjoyed it. If you like Nights into Dreams,
I have an authentic Japanese version that I picked up. Well, I had a friend pick it up in Japan. They had that controller that had the thumbstick. That's the definitive way to play it. It's pretty much unplayable with a D-pad. I mean, yeah, I think you can, but I want to say that they had packaged, you know, with the game in Japan, like the controller that right on big bold letters, you know, works with Nights into Dream, you know, like, so it was a, its own thing to promote that controller and promote that game.
Yeah, there were actually in the US, there is a bundle that came with that controller and Nights into Dreams. You're exactly correct. And that is the better controller for that game. It can get a little jarring getting used to the D-pad. You can do it, but definitely the controller is the better way to play.
Yeah, I'm glad I have it. And in Japan, it was cheap. It equated to like $5. I'm happy it's in my small, humble Japanese Saturn collection.
Absolutely. And the next one, this is one that I had not thought about in years. And when I put it on, it brought a smile to my face. Jetpack Christmas. MS-DOS era, throwback PC days. They released this. It was free. You could play as Santa, but you had a jetpack instead of the normal jetpack guy. You had a certain amount of fuel to this. If you've never seen this game, imagine the entire maze is on the front screen. It's a 2D game. You can see all the platforms. You can see all the things you need to collect. There's nothing hidden. But you have your character start in one space of the screen, and you have to get all the items in order to unlock a door and exit. And you have to get back to that door. Some things are high up, some things are low down, and you have a jetpack to help you maneuver around. So you can drop down without using fuel. You cannot go up without using fuel. So it takes a little bit of strategy and planning to get it. And sometimes they have extra gems and stuff in there that you can collect as well, gold pieces or whatnot. I always had a blast with that game. It was challenging. It made you think. All the levels were varied quite a bit. It's a fun all-around time. I played with my friends, and I remember back in the day, I can't remember if it was Christmas jetpack or if it was the regular jetpack. They had a level editor. You could build your own maps. You could drop your own stuff everywhere. And I would build the craziest things with like 800 elevators and all these crazy little things you had to pick up all over the place. I put extra fuel canisters everywhere so you could just fly wherever you wanted to. We had so much fun. I mean, that was pre-Mario Maker. That was like Mario Maker before Mario Maker 30 years in advance. I mean, that game was a blast. I just have so many good memories playing that at Christmas time.
I only remember Jetpack, not Christmas Jetpack. So that's news to me. That's really cool. And I didn't realize it had a level editor. That's really cool also.
It was actually a really good level editor too. I mean, it literally gave you all the symbols, all the pieces, and they did what they were supposed to do like in a regular game. You just click, drop them wherever you wanted to. It was simple. And then you hit play and you could try it out. You could test it, see if it worked. And then if it didn't work, you could edit it. Next one is one you see a lot. And they've actually done a lot of ROM hacks and things of those natures, Days Before Christmas. You see that for Sega Genesis. We never got it in North America. I mostly see the repo card, especially at conventions. It also came out on Super Nintendo. We didn't get it also on Super Nintendo. But you play as Santa Claus. It's kind of like a fun 2D platformer. Your job is to save Christmas from an evil mouse. Got to watch out for the mice. He's stolen all of the kids' presents. You even have a chance to turn into your evil twin, which is kind of like one of the gimmicks of the game. You become Anti-Claus instead of Santa Claus. In order to do this, you have to drink your cup of tea. So it's kind of funny. It's silly. It's a really easy game. I think that's probably the one thing that people will knock it for. I like it. I think it's worth a playthrough. If you don't like easy games that are just like simple to beat, don't play it. You'll get frustrated. It's cool. Next one. Jazz Jackrabbit Holiday Hair. That's another one. The Jazz Jackrabbit series was pretty popular back in the day on MS-DOS. That was kind of a Christmas theme. It had two unique levels in the game that were different than the regular. They reskin some of the game. And if you haven't played Jazz Jackrabbit, a lot of people love that game back in the day. It was an action platformer. They had collecting elements. It made cool sounds when you collected the gems. You had weapons. It just had a lot going for it. And for PC gaming, it was fun. And one of the unique things about the Christmas version of that game was it had a rap version of the Little Drummer Boy. So I don't know where else you're going to hear that. Kind of reminds me of when they did DK Rap for Donkey Kong.
I mean, how did you even get those? I mean, I feel Jazz Jackrabbit, that's probably not even on CDs. It's probably coming on floppy disks, huh?
Jazz Jackrabbit was on CDs, but that was a shareware, the Christmas version. So I think you could download it or otherwise. You had a floppy drive. I think there's floppy drives out there for that where you get a CD in the mail. but I don't know if that version had a CD too.
Yeah, I've never. I mean, I played Jazz Jackrabbit, and I loaded on my Packard Bell 386 and ran on Windows 3.1. I'm looking at your list here. I thought I was a PC gamer, and I hadn't heard of any of this stuff. Yeah, you're digging. You're opening up some doors I've never opened before.
Next one on the list, Duke Nukem Nuclear Winter. Oh, you guys play Duke Nukem?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I feel like everybody played Duke Nukem at some point. Played that when your parents weren't home. If you're listening and you're laughing right now, you know what that's about. It was an expansion pack, basically, for Christmas time and Duke Nukem. And they had some redesigned bosses. I mean, they went for the simple, easy thing, like let's reskin bad guys. Like, let's have a snowman, a flying Frosty, you know, Santa Claus. It was kind of a weird story to it. So Santa Claus had been captured. He'd been brainwashed by aliens that Duke had previously defeated. The enemies were being supported by a group known as the Feminist Elven Militia. If that doesn't sound more Duke Nukem, I don't know what does. So he travels to the North Pole to stop the brainwashed Santa Claus and his captors. And, you know, there's not much new to see here. If you like Duke Nukem, it's good. There's also a lot of ho, ho, ho in themed Santa hats, if you know what I mean. And some fun facts I'll kind of throw in, because there's some interesting things that developers did with this game. There's an Easter egg sitting out there of Mario in this game. Nintendo probably never realized, because knowing Nintendo, they would have completely chop blocked this game. But Mario, in one section of the game, if you go find it, is turned around backwards playing Mario Kart on a TV. There's also a small version of the first level of Doom that was recreated if you entered a portal, which is kind of interesting in the game. Yeah, I mean, that's just a couple. There's a bunch of other Easter eggs to the game if you want to go look up. The internet's got plenty of resources, but I always enjoy the Duke Nukem games, so it's a go for me to play. If you never played them, just a heads up, definitely not for kids. Do not play around your kids. It is mature, and in some cases, I would say 17 plus, the old NC-17s, but it's a good time. So last one I'm going to talk about here before dropping into the Home Alone internal design doc is Banjo-Kazooie. If you've played Banjo-Kazooie, you may know where I'm heading with this, but Freeze Easy Peak, they had one level in the game, and it was totally Christmas-themed. Back in the 90s, you always had a lava level, you had a snow level. That was in every game. And this was not just a snow level, but it had holiday theme shenanigans in this. And it was a ton of fun. The music was great. It was catchy. You had giant snowman. They had holiday missions, like helping Boggy's children get their presents. You had to find them, deliver them to them. If you did the ground pound in front of the Christmas tree, it was going to open up a mini game, and you had to help the Twinklies, which were a bunch of Christmas light bulbs. And you had like 60 seconds to get at least 10 of the Twinklies through the Twinkly monsters up to the tree so you could light the tree up. I mean, Banjo-Kazooie was goofy. All the games and activities were always that way. They had a flight challenge. You had to fly through the Christmas tree star on top 3 times, which is hard. The controls and platformers were known for difficulty at times, and that was not always an easy mission right there to get the jiggy. But you got that feel of the holidays. I love that game. One of my favorite all the time. If you've never played Banjo-Kazooie, go out there and do it. Xbox remasters are a perfect way to do it. If you got modern consoles, hit the Rare Replay Collection. Those graphically upgraded are completely faithful, and they actually control better on the modern controllers than they did back on the N64. All right, guys. So we're going to wrap up with something interesting here. I've never publicly taken this out or kind of reviewed it with anybody before, so this is a first for us, but this is Home Alone for Sega Genesis and Game Gear. This is one of the design phase documents that came out of Sega of America. So if you've ever been scratching your head wondering what went into the developer's mind when they made these games, here you go. Here's your moment. This was, I presume, sent out to some of the studio members of 20th Century Fox. And I believe this is kind of like for approval and review to buy off on it. I don't know why else they would put a document like this together. There's a lot of different interesting things. So it starts off kind of talking about an introduction about what this is, what they're going to do with Genesis, Game Gear. They go into the concept right away that it's going to be based on the movie. They're saying right up front that they've taken extra license to allow for a deeper game because apparently the movie was not deep enough. it's going to open the same way everything does with Kevin being left home alone. But he will not only have to defend his house now, he's got to defend the whole neighborhood. And that's true in the Genesis game. If you ever played it, I think it's actually the best one, but you do have to work on the whole neighborhood. And each house has a different version. So this is pretty faithful to what I expected. This part I found kind of interesting is they distinctly discussed weapons. They said this very delicately for the movie studio. The other major change is how we handle Kevin's weapons. In the movie, Kevin primarily used passive weapons, requiring the crooks to walk, fall, or trip into them. While this works for comic effect, it doesn't allow the amount of interactivity required for a good game. I wonder what their definition of good game is. So now they're basically stating that they're going to allow Kevin to now carry an air-powered BB gun, as in the movie, and will hold limited amount of shots and require the player to find ammo power-ups. And the other active weapons, they said, are not simple. They will have to be acquired by assembling items together, including a snowball bazooka, an ice machine, an air blower, and an ice cream scoop. I don't know how an ice cream scoop's a weapon. They talk about passive weapons. Let me get my scoop out. I don't know. I'll scoop you to death. Yeah, I don't know. So if you assemble the right items, player now will have a snowball bazooka weapon. So I guess it's a simple thing.
So real quick, who's the developer for the Sega version?
This is Sega of America. So it says if they have not assembled the right pieces, they could either be electrocuted and lose stamina points, or worst case, the item explodes. They really tried to build some deep gameplay here. And they have two types of arcade challenges. When Kevin's outside, overhead view, the player will be in control of Kevin, who is on a fan-powered sled. And the fan, that was weird to me. The fan can be turned on or off to control the speed or direction. And Kevin's goal is to find out which house has the crooks or where they would be robbing next. The crooks have to drive around in a van casing the houses. So if they spot them, they'll run them down in their van. So they're going to run them over with the car and murder poor Kevin. When the crooks finally decide on a house, they pull in the driveway, get in. The crooks enter the house, and there's a loot meter that will begin to rise. So if you don't enter and remove the crooks before the loot meter reaches the max, then Marv is going to flood the house. What a penalty. Although that's kind of like true to the movie. I will say that they did kind of stick faithful to that. If you want to win, you have to delay them long enough and the police show up to arrest them. And then the second arcade challenge is in the house. So side view showing one floor of the house at a time. And each house presents a unique challenge. So some houses are going to have guard dogs. Some are under renovation. Others are just decorated in bad taste. That's a weird thing. I feel like they're really trying to hype this up in this thing. They can chase the crooks out of the house before they can loot everything by creating enough discomfort to raise the pain meter. Although I guess that kind of was part of the gimmick of the movie, right? They're always inflicting the Three Stooges style damage on each other. They go through a little more information, but they head into kind of the storyline here. And the storyline is Kevin's been left alone as a movie. We talked about that. But they attempt to model the Saturday morning cartoon concept. So like many cartoons, this have taken this movie license and added additional story possibilities and new supporting characters. So what they're basically saying is we're not going to follow all the movie. We're making our own stuff. They have a number of different stuff. I'm not going to go through all that stuff. They basically break it out now into like game flow sections. So Sega sets up a sequence of how these games go. So they got an opening sequence, Sega logo. If you ever remember turning on the game, they actually have in this design document how that all is supposed to go. Where's the starting point? The logo animation, where you go, maps. They also have game flow for internal houses. They've laid out trap schematics, weapon screens, rich mansion. I guess that's Kevin's home, it says. Ultra modern house. These are the names of the houses. This is what they call them. Old house. Tacky 60s house. That's an interesting name. Colonial house. We got the farmhouse. Oh, and we got ending sequence, good ending sequence, bad ending sequence, and credits. So I had no idea there was multiple ending sequences, but Sega did plot in multiple ending sequences. So if you haven't got the good one, there's something waiting out there for you. A little Easter egg. The next part of design document breaks into like gameplay. what should you expect? So like opening sequences, the start button, they're talking about stuff like that. The Sega logo, what the logo animation has to look like. Demo sequence. Does anybody remember demo sequences when you start up a game and it plays? According to this, there's three separate and unique sequences. So each one's going to play for 30 seconds. Track mode, they called it. I guess that means to attract you to play it. And you'll have to demo the sequence three times to see each of them specified. One of them is an internal chase around Kevin's house. Second one is Kevin on his sled in the external shot. And the third is Kevin inside his old house. So they picked and kind of staged a couple scenes in there for you, get you all excited about playing the game. Option menus, game level. So they have a game level. Remember you had to select like difficulty level? This one had beginner, which is 10 minutes of gameplay. Normal is 15 minutes and difficult is 30 minutes of gameplay. So the higher the difficulty, the longer the game time will be. So this was intended to be a fairly short game. 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 30 minutes. Although games were a lot shorter back then. They're talking about some of the other options. Graphic concepts, facial shot of Harry, facial shot of Marv. I don't know if anybody wants that on their wall. Facial shot of Harry, facial shot of Kevin, shot of Kevin on phone. So these were like graphics that they were plotting, and they have text descriptions too. Gold tooth sparkle animation, whatever that means. So they're thinking of everything here. So when you go through all those different sequences, or you see like a random cutscene or a face pop up on the screen, they had to pre-plot all that. I mean, that's part of the design life of this game. A starting point, the outside screen in front of a house. You always got to have a transition point. This kind of talks about the views and different things about being outside the house. Button combos, what can everything do? Sometimes I never knew what the button combos meant. I don't know if you guys were good at figuring them out, but like there's combos on this. Like down plus button C is low jump. I would never know that. I'd be hitting C trying to jump. I would not be hitting down and C unless I did it on accident. Sled jump. They got a different button. Turbo boost. They got a point system for different moves. And then obstacles. Obstacles is probably kind of interesting. So they got snowmen. Of course, you got to have snowmen in a Christmas movie. Snow drifts. I guess that's for when you're on a sled. Mailboxes. So these were all intended for you to run into, I guess. I thought I was just bad at the game. Apparently it was plotted that way. Fire hydrants. Of course, you got to have a fire hydrant. These are all like generic things. Trees and shrubs. What video game didn't have that? Potholes. This is sounding like Paperboy now. Snow shovels. Ponds, ramps, vans, mail trucks. Darn evil mailman getting in your way. Cars, pedestrians, tires. Wow, they had a lot of obstacles. Ice skaters. You don't always realize unless you run into things that these things are obstacles. Ammo power-ups. External maps. This actually has screenshots of what the maps are intended to look like. What does different things do? Like ice, they actually define. You ever go play a game with slippery ice?
Yep, it's the worst.
So they actually define it here. They say the sled speed increased by 2 times and decreased friction. So that's the actual set speed. And they have a different speed for sidewalks. So everything in here is actually defined differently by what speed you're going to go. Ice, snow, pavement, or sidewalks. Pavement or sidewalks with the sled, ice, snow, pavement. There's multiple different situations depending. The van has different speeds too. So they actually programmed a lot of different speeds. That's actually kind of interesting based on the pavement or whatever it was driving over. They'll all move at different paces. Quadrant content. So that's how they broke out where random items were located, like obstacles inside the houses. So they called them quadrants. So they designed those in different four place areas. And it defines each one of the ones that has different areas to it. I mean, there's an exhaustive list here. I'm looking at 1 through 25. There's 25 different quadrants to this game. So each one of those was probably programmed individually for all those wonderful obstacles to be in your way. Internal houses, they have different features. Like there's Kevin's home has a giant tarantula. I remember the tarantula. You guys remember the tarantula?
Yeah. Oh.
Security robot. Of course, the ultra modern house has a security robot. Nobody had that back then. That's a little bit of liberty right there they were talking about in the beginning. The old house has breakaway floors. All right. It's old. It's got floors that fall. A tacky 60 house, of course, has an attack cat. It's probably the old. I think they're saying it's the old cat lady's house. Colonial has a turn of the century ghost. Okay. So colonial means there's ghost. And farmhouse has a killer pig, because what farmhouse doesn't have a killer pig? Interesting. They go on to describe each of these features about, I mean, they wrote a whole paragraph about these. I wouldn't think you would have that much to talk. But the killer pig, I would like to tell you, has three full paragraphs. So the killer pig is the mighty killer pig.
Forget the tarantula. The pig's the more of the threat. That doesn't check.
Yeah. Even the turn of century ghost. He's only got one paragraph. Now, every house is filled with valuables. There's a top five. I'm gonna read them to you in no particular order, and I want you guys to guess which one in order are the top five most valuable things in this house. Radio. Those things are dirt cheap now. Jewelry box. Television. Stereo. And VCR.
Jewelry box has got to be the highest.
VCR.
VCR is ranked the highest on this list.
Of course.
Jewelry box is last.
State of the art.
The VCRs are expensive, and the TV was number two. TVs were expensive back then. It was like a luxury item if you had a TV at a certain point. So these were the five basic items and valuables. And they did a good job. Like, they did pictures they dropped in here, but I can't imagine doing this in like whatever they're snipping this in back in the 90s, because these pictures by today's standards are horrendous. They're like grayscale pixel pictures that are not very accurate. So they kind of go in detail a little more, and they have trap schematics. So they've laid out in this blueprint where the area of it is, the inventory of the traps, and the schematic of where they are to be placed. More on the controls, which is interesting because they already talked about, they started off with button combos, and now they're heading into just basic, you know, direction pad does this. And then they have some really fancy drawings here. I'm gonna hold this up to the camera for you guys to see. It looks like something that like a young kid would draw. It got the choo-choo train. It's got little squares separating the house. I'm pretty sure this is not what the game looks like, but that's how I guess they laid it out in that animation software to show you with a tripwire and maybe how they plotted this out when they're showing people a blowtorch. Oh man, that's the first time I've seen that. The damage is equivalent to the maximum hit from the hot coal launcher. Hot coal launcher. Everybody's got one of those in their house. Along with the grease and paint. Okay, grease, paint can, tar, and toy cars. All right, that's kind of like the movie. Marbles, jacks. All right. I don't think you got grease all over your floor, though, but I can't believe a hot coal launcher. Must be a blast from the past. Check out this snowball bazooka. I know you guys can't see this, but I'm going to let Bill and Rob enjoy this wonderful bazooka. Reminds me of a loudspeaker, one of those things you talk into. You will pay attention. Weapon assembly area. Wow. There's so much stuff in here. Glue bomb gun. I don't think anybody's doing that unless you're glittering somebody. Flashbulb grenade launcher. Sonic wave gun. They're really selling this thing. Electrical blockade launcher. Like, what is every young boy that plays video games want to see? They clearly want a flashbulb grenade launcher and a glue bomb gun and a sonic wave gun. I'd be like, yeah, give me that. Rubber ball mortar. Rope gun? Oh, it's a rope gun. Like, think about this practically. Has one of these ever existed? A pepper storm launcher. Let me go buy my pepper storm launcher. Firing burst of exploding pepper. That sounds ridiculous. Almost as ridiculous as the hot coal launcher. Oh, you get a loot magnet device so you can pick up all of your TVs and VCRs.
Good way to get rich.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of rich, here's the rich mansion house. You love that drawing or what? Still, I think my kid could do a nicer job of that on the on the computer these days. Very old school. They probably just had like a standard image. I mean, this is back in the early days of computers. I think I was on a green screen at this point on Mac when this game probably came out. We were just transitioning into Windows, you know, sometime in the 90s there. And then they actually define, like, there's multiple floors to each of these houses. So you got floors one through four, including like the china cabinet room. That's something people, I don't think people have china cabinet rooms these days. You guys see that much?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, formal dining room, that's still around. Study slash entertainment room. You don't see studies as much, maybe an office. Stained glass room. I don't know if I ever saw that outside of a church. Hallway, master bedroom, that's all standard stuff. Ooh, here's an interesting one. On floor one, there are pickle barrels. People are stocking barrels of pickles in their house. The porch has ricking chair players. Is that an old term? I've never even heard of it.
And they left no stone unturned.
The parlor. They did not. The parlor. That's something I would hear like my grandmother say. The parlor. I wonder how old the development crew was here on this. Attic. They even got an eat-in kitchen. We've defined there's not just a kitchen, but there's an eat-in kitchen as well. We got a meditation room in case the game's really stressing you out on floor three. So take a quick peek over there. We have the bathroom on the fourth floor if you need to take a break. And the ending sequences. So the good ending sequence, I don't know, maybe I should not add any spoilers for anybody, but there is a good ending sequence. There is a bad ending sequence, which actually they wrote like three sentences on a good ending sequence. The bad ending sequence has two full paragraphs to describe why it's bad. And it's been written out, the plot and all the words. And I'm not going to spoil it for you, but it sounds more interesting than the good ending sequence. And then the credits will come up. Technical issues. Interface. Oh, I thought they were going to leave like an IT number to call if you have technical issues on the development. Controller specification. Wow, they really laid out like these buttons. And I can tell you that they have different things here, from outside scenarios, internal scenarios, trap schematics, to weapon assembly controls. And they all use those couple buttons on the Genesis. And they all are defined different depending on what you're on. So you got to remember all these. That to me is a mistake in designing a game, to make a button do 8 different things depending on what the different situation you're in. That's confusing for a kid that's probably going to be playing this game. I mean, that's your target audience. Kids to teenagers probably at that time. But they had it all here. They even define out the characters, what type of motions they can make. Ducking down on one knee, electrocution. So these are probably like the animations. And they say I have an art list that's listed. I don't know if I have the art list. It's not in this document. I have the full document. But giant eye bulge. The crooks are the only ones with the giant eye bulges or giant ear bulges. And then turn into rope mummy. So these are like all the things when you do it. Giant sneeze. Carton achoo. Thank you for describing that for me. Oh, we can burst into flames and blacken. So top outside view art list. Okay, so they're just talking about that. Music list. So they actually have, so they got title music, outside music. Kevin's home has a different music. Each of the houses have their own theme. That's, you know, Mr. Soundtrack Man over there, Bill. I think that's pretty good for that era to have that many variety of tunes. The tacky 60s house not only has one, but has two different song lists. So depending on which one you're in, I don't know what triggers it, but they have different songs. And then the good ending sequence and bad ending sequence, they each get their own music. Credits have their own, and they have stereo pop tune. I have no idea what that is, but I want to hear it. Stereo pop tune. Sounds like a good track from back then. Coming at you with the stereo pop tune. Boom, boom, boom. So sound effect list. Wow. I talked about earlier that one game that had no sound effects. Two full pages of sound effects. That's pretty substantial. I mean, they actually put some effort into this game. Maybe that's why this is the best one out of all of them. They thought through it the most. But even from like introduction to story, there's a sound effect for tooth glitter. I don't know what the sound of tooth glitter is, but there is a sound effect. A rattle of a sewer. Hitting a mailbox. Okay. Pop up from sewer sound. So, I mean, even these little details, they're putting a sound effect. A drip of a boiler. What does a drip of a boiler sound like? I kind of want to play and find out. Ooh, here's a good one. Toilet seat pop-up. You need a sound effect for the toilet seat pop-up. Oh, radiator steam hissing. Bounce on chair / couch. And they abbreviated that STD. I don't know what that sound is. It's kind of, I don't know what that stands for either in this instance. And yeah, mansion, we got laser shots. You got some pew-pews going on over here. TV static. I mean, they really, the dumbwaiters going up and down, pool ball sounds. Oh, the tarantula has sound effects. I'm surprised by that. I've seen a tarantula in real life, and they're usually pretty quiet, depending on if they're attacking, springing, walking, climbing. Oh, the farmhouse with the evil pig has his own sound effects, and it's it says "goink goink" with a GW. It's truly, and there's also a pig stabbing sound effect for the evil pig. I want to meet this evil pig. He sounds like a heck of a character. I'd have a drink with him. Man, the colonial house. Because the colonial is old, we have to listen to candles falling, the floor burning, refrigerator chugging, whatever the refrigerator's chugging, water spurting from a sink, all the old things. Oh, ghost rattling chains. There we go. That's a little Marley Christmas Carol throwback there. Man, what's at the 60s house? Music sonic boom. Apparently that's a 60s thing. Large lava lamp globbing. That's pretty impressive. They thought that through. Lava lamp actually globs. A shower filling. How do you fill a shower? I don't know that one. Drowning noise. Okay, that would probably make some noise, possibly. Sinking into a waterbed. Have you guys ever tried a waterbed back in the day? I forgot about waterbeds a lot.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I had one.
I had one too.
Wow. Yeah.
Those all the rage, man.
Man, I'm feeling like the Lone Ranger over here. I never had one. I've laid on one before, but man, you guys were high class back then.
Or we were, I don't know if that's high class now. Like if someone said you had a waterbed, we're like, that's weird.
Yeah. There was obviously issues, especially if you accidentally poked a hole with your keys or, you know, any number of combinations.
Yeah, it's very risky.
This one is interesting because this is also tied into 60s house. There's a sound effect for sinking into shag carpeting. That was all the that was all the rage back then. But I mean, that somebody really had to sit there and think, and what is this sinking into shag carpeting going to sound like? And in a digital bit tone. I bet it sounds pretty terrible.
Well, I just wonder how most of these sound effects sound for Genesis. I mean, let's be honest. There was a lot of twangs and funny sounds coming out of that sound chip, especially if it's Western developed in the States. I don't know. I'm a little skeptical. Although, Steve, you definitely have piqued my interest. And probably not tonight, but in the very near future, I am going to pop this game in and I'm going to play it. And I hope there's a sound test after all these large lists of all these sounds. I want to hear some of this stuff. Hopefully I don't have to sit through a half hour long play and get the bad ending, but you know,
and see what they took out or kept, you know,
I have played this game in the last 12 months. So it's been not too long, but I don't remember this vast list of all these details, man. They just crazy.
Yeah, I never knew that either. I bet you next time you go listen to it, you're going to be listening for all these things. You want to hear that evil pig.
Oh, absolutely.
You want to hear him goink goink over there. Oh, man. The ultra modern house, of course, it's ultra modern, so it's got lasers shooting at you. So there's a laser shooting effect. You know, go figure. Conveyor belt. You know, they're super modern over there. They got a conveyor in their house for conveying all the people upstairs. I don't know what they're doing with the conveyor. Large TV static, not little, large. And don't forget the trampoline or the treadmill or the waterbed sinking. So they're also filling their showers at the ultra modern house. So that's apparently all the rage at two of the houses, or the robots that have lasers as well. I wonder if there's a distinguished sound between the laser shooting and the robot laser shooting, because now I'm really curious. So, Bill, when you go play, please let me know if there's a difference in the sound of the lasers.
I'll have to report back next episode on my findings of this vast amount of sound effects in this game.
And the robot grabbing people. I didn't know that would be a sound either, but it's probably an interesting one. It's probably just like a mechanical noise. I can't imagine that, like, some of these sound effects probably sound exactly the same. If I was a sound guy, I'd be like, okay, this sounds kind of like that. And I'd just rename the file 8 times and have the same sound effect for like 8 different things. But I mean, this is a huge, exhaustive list of sound effects. It's crazy to me that they had so many different things in there. It seems like they really tried to make a good game here, looking at this document. That's what I'm seeing out of this. they took all this information and they summed it up in a conclusion. It's only one paragraph long. And they stated here that the greatest challenge we face in creating this design is to take the 15 minutes of action from the movie and develop it into a game that would give the player hours of challenge. And the above design is a unique mixture of arcade action and strategy elements that address this challenge. This design will give both versions of Home Alone a lot of replayability and challenge the players' minds as well as their reflexes. That's a pretty good closing. And the one thing I will say about Home Alone before we wrap up here is it absolutely did try to go with strategy with implementing the different houses. It tried to do a little bit different things. And I think they took a little bit of gambles there, and I can respect them for that. Did they pull off everything? No, but they do have an evil pig that goes quink quink, and I will celebrate them for that. So thank you everybody for tuning in today, and I appreciate you listening in, and we'll catch you next time on the Retro Recall Podcast.